be vertical videos on pages. I've tested this on multiple accounts. It echoes what people are seeing more organically. Doing it in multiple instances directly below the hero space. So it almost like if you're scrolling on mobile, which most people are, it almost feels like you're scrolling TikTok because there's like 3-4 videos lined up just ready to watch.
There could be a play for some brands to bring back their Black Friday ads. We just brought back a Black Friday offer with one of the brands that I work with. We've spent over $19K at over 5 ROAS. It's definitely a more scrappy approach, but it has proven to be successful.
If you're a D2C brand on Shopify and you're not using Black Crow, then you're leaving significant revenue on the table. Black Crow uses your own data to help you identify customers returning to your site who would otherwise remain anonymous. The more customers you can identify, the more email and SMS abandonment messages you can send. You'll see incremental revenue almost immediately without having to change any of your existing flows. The best part? All it takes is a one-click integration. There's zero development work required. Head on over to blackcrow.ai/DTC to get started with a free 30-day trial.
It's all killer, no filler. I'm Eric. This is the D2C Podcast, and we're here with the Slay team, two of our top contributors from the really great reciprocal relationship that D2C has with Pilot House, a digital agency here in British Columbia, where a big part of what our appeal is in our content is that we're actually delivering cross-platform insights on what exactly is working best in the trenches right now. And where we get that information are from people like Jocelyn and Avery, who we actually have a quid pro quo type relationship where we pay them in Amazon gift cards and they just drop hot insights for us on the daily and furnish their houses. So I'm super excited to have you both here. Avery, you've been on the podcast before, but Jocelyn, you've just been like a massive contributor in the newsletter, but it's great to have you here in person. Welcome.
Thanks. Yeah, it's great to be here. Really excited to chat on the podcast today.
Yeah, we've got some great social videos that we're going to be sharing from you that you produce for us that we're excited to jump into. But to start with, we're just talking on the newsletter side about writing about Q5. And it's an interesting topic because, you know, on D2C Twitter, people are like a little burnt out on Q5. A little bit. People are just kind of like a little skeptical of it. But like having had as a company, actually, a really tough January last year, it's just like, you know, making not only getting results now during Q5, because people are still shopping up to the last minute is hyper important, but also just like continuing to fill that funnel for January to avoid the hangover. Those are my two big thoughts about Q5. Avery, how are you thinking?
Yeah, I definitely agree. People can like the burnt out mentality around Q5 is exactly why it's so important, because a lot of advertisers will shut down or just not want to do it, which is totally fair. Everyone's tired, but costs start to drop. And you also, like, what I use it for, what I'm actively using it for on several accounts is like just carrying us over from this very specific moment on platform of gifting like red and green colored ads and shifting to more evergreen approaches. So what I typically do is I don't create like Q5 specific ads that are like, oh, you didn't get what you wanted. I tend to go back to like really evergreen basics that I can hopefully get to scale in these last, like, I mean, I feel like Q5 for me is like the last 2 weeks of December, not really that 1 week. It's like, yeah, the last 2 weeks here and kind of the first week of January, where it's like, I'm not really running specific New Year stuff. I'm not running specific gifting stuff. I'm trying to get a ton of momentum around ads that will carry us through hopefully the next couple of months as sentiment changes a bit on platform. And of course you can like mix in some fun like Q5 specific stuff, but what I see works is like a slight differentiator in the offer and then evergreen creative that you just know is going to win.
How late can you run gifting creative? Like, because people are still, I saw someone driving a Christmas tree home for, you know, the last 5 days to have up. Like, how late can you run gifting off creative?
It keeps working because people like myself will see it and buy things for themselves. I also find like, yeah, it keeps working for a multitude of reasons. People are buying gifts late, buying for themselves. And I find too, like a good piece of advice is don't think that you have to switch to like gift card focused creative. that almost never works. Nobody wants to see a render of your gift card on their feed. It looks stupid, if we're being honest, and you maybe shouldn't do it. So keeping like the actual gifting, and then, you know, if I'm like, I feel like this is a classic dad move, no offense, Eric, but like if I'm a dad, I'm trying to get something last minute, I might end up going for a gift card, but what's going to get me off platform is like the cool, sparkly, actual like gifting focused, product focused ads. So like,
I got our Switch this year, by the way.
That's sick. You know what I bought for myself? Quick sidebar. I just bought Nintendo Switch Sports. I was a big Wii Sports girl, and I've been wrecking my arm on tennis.
Absolutely
wrecking my arm. So you should probably go to that one too. Very nostalgic. That's a good one.
Okay, so no gift cards.
So I would say like no gift cards. Like you can basically run gifting right up to the big day, the big show. And like I said, people, if they are wanting to like send an email or put a printed out gift card under the tree, they will navigate to that gift card. But if they're fine with just the like, I'm sorry, here's the email confirmation, they'll buy the product, but it's the product that gets them in and the gifting ads that get them in.
But ultimately start layering in your evergreen type offers to sort of transition you to January. Whereas Jocelyn, what's the Q5 strategy that's worked well for you lately?
Same thing, piling up on evergreen. I also think with gifting ads, if they're broad enough, you can run them as evergreen, and that can help you get some momentum into Valentine's Day. Because right after Q5 is the time to start prepping for Q1, and Valentine's can start as early as the first or second week of January in terms of offer testing and getting ads live that way. So working on really scaling up evergreen in Q5, taking advantage of the lower CPMs and lower CPCs so we can get traffic to site, and knowing that there are people who just received Christmas money and are looking for gifts for themselves. Maybe they didn't get something and they really wanted it or had their eye on it. If you have a solid offer lined up, it can really get people over the edge and to check out. So yeah, focusing on strong offer, taking advantage of the lower click costs and traffic costs, and working on getting evergreen scaled in ad accounts is really the main focus for Q5.
We also we're just talking about it in the newsletter, that like refund money is spent like most of the time. So anytime there's like returns or refunds during that period, you want to be there with like the alternative to what they've just refunded. But Jocelyn, you mentioned another tactic that you were testing now that was actually working, where you were actually just reviving old messaging, turning on old campaigns and seeing a bump. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, we just brought back a Black Friday offer with one of the brands that I work with. I myself have seen a handful of Black Friday ads in my feed over the last week, really scroll stopping. And once we did turn the offer back on for this one brand, we tested non-Black Friday messaging alongside the Black Friday messaging, and Black Friday has scaled by far the strongest. So we've spent over 19K at over five ROAS, and that's the strongest messaging out of what we've tested. So there could be a play for some brands to bring back their Black Friday ads. It's definitely a more scrappy approach, but it has proven to be successful, and it's really working for one of the brands that we work with.
Until everyone starts doing it, then it's just like Black Friday is all of Q4.
It's just all the time.
I like it. Well, no, it's interesting. And I think it's one of those little things that people could take from this and just test. It's a low effort test. It's honestly crazy in meta how often just turning on old winners just works in general. So it's always good to continue to test.
I feel like too, with that Black Friday thing, like people think it's like they fully think it's a mistake. So they think, I think there's like always this like added built-in urgency where they think that they've stumbled across something that a brand like maybe doesn't actually want to put out there. So they just assume it's like, oh, they accidentally like left this on. I'm going to go in, purchase right away because they might realize their mistake and take it down. So I think part of it's too, just like people feel like they're being sneaky.
I think that's a great point, actually. I think that's probably a big part. You think they're getting a deal or sneaking one by them. Yeah. So Jocelyn, you created some really cool content that we're going to be launching on socials. We're just really trying to crack like direct to camera, you know, insight videos, and you really nailed it. And they're like, they're technical and they're like dry, but they're good. And there's so many good insights to them. And I just wanted to talk, this is something we haven't talked about in a while, but you talked about a big win you had over Black Friday, Cyber Monday in a two-parter that we'll release, all about how you kind of used vertical and horizontal scaling to like really scale some stuff up. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, it was really exciting. We scaled a brand up on Meta. We 5x spend on Black Friday. Definitely was not expecting to scale that aggressively. We had to increase our daily spend limit twice on Black Friday, which really thankful that we have solid Meta reps to help us get that push through. And they had a really strong offer, so we did a bunch of post-click testing. We sent traffic to PDP, a landing page, and their blog. Ultimately, the landing page was a top performer, so we optimized down on the post-click side. And in the ad account, scaled really aggressively, both vertically and horizontally. So made duplicate campaigns with the single top ad that was really crushing in the ad account. It had a strike-through price. And really focused on the product and offer. So that's what got people through the door. And then on the post-click side, the offer, landing page, benefits, USPs all sealed the deal for consumers. And yeah, focused on just really aggressive budget increases. Thankfully, being in the Eastern time zone, I could be online earlier and really start scaling up early in the day. And yeah, we were able to go from just under 15K to 75K in a day.
And how did the ROAS hold up?
Yeah, we were over a 3 for the day. So slightly lower than where we were the day prior, but at the scale that we ended up at, it was a solid day, a record breaking day for the client. Previously, before we onboarded, their top spending day was just under 5K. So to be able to scale them up that aggressively and really deliver the results that they were looking for is definitely a win-win for everyone on the team.
Definitely pretty slay, I would say. It's very... very slay, I would say, which is a big theme on the team, that the writing team here, which we call the Mavericks, which you don't need to get into. It's more of a internally facing biker club that we have. So we're talking about post-click, talking about backing in, dialing down the post-click, which is an integral part of running those offers. What were some of the post-click wins that you saw on the creative side, Avery?
Totally, yeah. I feel like I've been like really manically making pages and measuring incremental performance over this past Q4, which Jocelyn has been doing alongside me. Big wins would be vertical videos on pages. I've tested this on multiple accounts. It echoes what people, I think, are seeing more organically. So I sometimes, like, you get a piece of content that's really good that you might not necessarily run as an ad. Like, it's a great organic piece of content. So now, like, rehousing those on pages, which has been working really well, doing it in multiple instances directly below the hero space. So it almost, like, if you're scrolling on mobile, which most people are, it almost feels like you're scrolling TikTok because there's, like, 3-4 videos lined up just ready to watch if you want to. And most people just watch 2 or 3 seconds of them. That's good enough. So the vertical videos has been a huge takeaway. I've also been really hyper-focused throughout like these intense sale periods on consolidating like what is being seen from a mobile device. So again, so much of our traffic does come from mobile. So figuring out how to play in that like very small space that I have. And how can I use a banner to communicate the offer? This has kind of been the setup. Banner to communicate the offer, a winning like piece of photography or UGC in the hero space, and then a super simple like urgency focused headline that really drives home like you need this. So there's like the component of like very cut and dry. This is how much it costs. It's about to sell out. Here's what it looks like. All visible as soon as they hit the landing page, and that format, which Jocelyn is again very familiar with, has been performing quite well across a couple other accounts. But like taking it that extra step and thinking about like, how am I using the real estate that I have? Because it is so small on mobile. and what am I actually like communicating in kind of those three main points that most landing pages will have.
Super cool. What's one, if not the most important part of your owned marketing strategy? It's list growth, and Postscript has just rolled out a patent-pending revolutionary new way to grow your list. With on-site opt-in, here's how it works. A pop-up appears and a subscriber can auto-fill their phone number. They tap submit to subscribe, the visitor is then sent a one-time passcode via text, the visitor enters the code, leveraging auto-fill, they tap submit and boom, they're subscribed. Moments later, their welcome message arrives. Not only is this a path that customers understand, it's easy to use, it keeps visitors on site, and it solves for any attribution issues. It's the future of acquisition, and it's only available at Postscript. Learn more at postscript.io/onsite. I meant to ask you too, Jocelyn, about the offer that you scaled so heavily. What do you think was about the offer that made it so compelling? Obviously the technical scaling side of it was cool, but what was the offer itself that you think unlocked the scale and the profitability?
Yeah, it was over 60% off of one of the core products for the brand. So it was a really strong offer, and users were likely looking at prices for various brands within the space and knew that it was a really strong deal. On that account, we also get a lot of view attribution. And with this one offer, we were over 80% click as opposed to typically seeing 20% click. So people were really ready to purchase when they saw the ads and click through with it being such a strong offer.
Very cool. And then Avery, you described, you know, the funnel that I'm sure you duplicated across all the campaigns you worked on or the brands that you worked with. But was there any offer or anything about a specific offer that really stood out to you this Black Friday, Cyber Monday that was effective?
Yeah, I saw a couple tiered offers perform really well across vastly different verticals. So giving people the option and incentivizing them in a way to get to that like top tier of saving the most. So a tiered offer is like based on either spend threshold. So like spend 50, you get 10% off, spend 100, get 15, or it could be based on like units. What I saw perform the best was definitely based on spend threshold. And it just kind of gives people an excuse to maybe add something extra to their cart for themselves or something like that. But yeah, I think in general, when it came to offers, like I would say across the agency this year, like the more serious you were about your actual offer, the better it performed, which is of course always true. But I know there is a lot of, what do people say, cold feet. There's a lot of cold feet heading into this Q4 around what kind of offers brands wanted to run and what kind of financial situations they're in. But I think across the agency, we saw those, like Jocelyn mentioned, like, you know that it's a good price for what you're getting. You know that it's like worth it to buy it at this minute, even if it's like, wasn't necessarily in the budget, you know that this is going to be good for you long term. So those type of like hard hitting, very serious, like this is truly the best deal you'll get all year type of offers perform well, like across the board.
And then turn it back on again and make them feel like they've got one over on you, which is a great, I don't know where that is in Maslow's hierarchies of needs, but like that's feeling like you duped the marketer is always a good one. Jocelyn, you talked about view attribution and so basically view attribution, click attribution is how Meta determines how they credit the sale, whether it's from a click interaction or from a view interaction. And one of the videos that you created recently was a win that you had on an account where you really raised the click attribution from view attribution. And I was wondering, like, there's obviously so much more of a direct connection to the attribution from the click than there is from the view. How does an account find itself in a situation like that where it has like a way more a view attribution than it has click attribution? Is it just from running too much view attributed spend?
Yeah, it can be multiple things. So brands or products that have a longer conversion cycle are more likely to have more view attribution with users taking more time through that consideration period. Running with 7-day click, 1-day view campaigns also makes you more likely to have that view attribution come through. So by strategizing creative and copy as well as buying all towards trying to get that click and ramping up urgency to get users to convert same day or within the 7-day window, can really help to improve that click attribution, and then really honing in on how you're optimizing. So taking a look at 7-day and 1-day click in particular within your ad account, and cutting weaker performers based off of those attribution settings, as well as allocating your budgets by looking at click attribution, can really help to improve that side of things. And then another benefit of improving your click attribution is that you are more likely to see stronger results in GA, because users are clicking through and converting either same day or within that period that will allow you to see more conversions in GA. And then you can have that second touch point when making your optimizations and budget allocations.
Makes sense. Avery, I didn't put this on the sheet, but I know you like to be weird. I like to be weird as well. And being weird works often. I think, I don't know if that's a quote, but in ads, like, don't be afraid to, like, you know, put some of yourself in there. Do you have any examples of over the last little while of like ways that being weird has worked?
Yeah, I mean, always, I think I like lead with weird, I would say. Like, everything I do is, weird when it comes to ads and living. I'm trying to think of a specific example. Yeah, I lead with it in real life too, not just in my work as a marketer. No, I think just like I feel like weird is something, because I'm weird, that I use interchangeably with just like authenticity. So I feel like I can think of more instances where really authentic ads and like really pulling back on like leading with like USPs in the offer, and instead leading with like, you know, like, I've been looking for months and I've been really stressed. I can't find like a shirt that fits comfortably. I just saw this ad. I found it. That kind of like leading with the more authentic voice, which for me is weird, but for other people might be a little bit different. Yeah, definitely just getting a bit like wacky and creative. I'm trying to think. I feel like this time of year is a lot of just like, this is the offer, this is the product, because that's just like what works. I think I've been getting a little bit more weird on pages. So sort of what Jocelyn was talking about, like really focusing on the pre-click side to like getting that click and getting people, tricking them, making them think it'll be a normal experience. And then I've been getting really funky with like copy on pages. And I think part of that too is like understanding people are shopping a lot right now. So just trying to do something that's like kind of like, I've been throwing a lot of stupid puns on pages just to make it like an enjoyable experience. So I guess that's something weird that has been working. Just this idea of like, you know, you're buying a ton of stuff this time of year. It's not that fun. Once we get you off platform, we'll have a good time. Couple of silly puns. A lot of like sleigh, but like Santa's sleigh, using that.
I think we're doing that for this podcast. So I've come by it honestly. We're all
nice.
Really into slaying. I have another thing here about favorite marketing stories. And Avery, are we really talking about milk again?
Have we ever actually talked about milk?
I feel like we did one time. I'm not sure.
This has been my pipe dream for like a full year. I want to do a full podcast on Got Milk because it's my favorite marketing story. And I sometimes just watch that, like, I think that speaks really well to me saying I like weird ads. Sometimes I just watch that ad if I want to like feel ad. Like, get weird, get odd, like Aaron Burr, the sandwich, it's so weird. So sometimes I watch that, but that one's definitely my favorite, just in terms of like what it became, I think speaks like directly to what we do as digital marketers. Like, there was this ad that was made for milk, which is not a super sexy, exciting product. And then it became this like cultural phenomenon to the point where I was a kid and I saw like Taylor Swift drinking milk. And I was like, that's so sick. I have to convince my parents to get milk. We were not a dairy family, but I wanted real milk because
you want that mustache.
So it like took on this. Yeah,
and if you think about it, like, I wanted to like the mustache is also a sign that you're like drinking it voraciously with like reckless abandon.
You love
like you're not sipping it and trying to, you're like drinking it so much that it's creating a giant mustache. So it actually has consumption built into it as a symbol.
Yeah.
Genius.
Yeah. And like what I love about it is it's like it's a piece of culture now. And it's really like funny to hear in retrospect, like they just kind of couldn't really afford like lawyers. So when like got other stuff started popping up, they just had to let it like spread like wildfire, which is kind of what you hope will happen with like an ad on TikTok, is you do something and then people just recreate it and it becomes free marketing at that point. Even if it's not necessarily for like milk, you still see something in that font that says got blank and you think about milk. I don't drink milk now, but soy milk is the way to go.
Alternative milks. It's funny because that leads into the story that I was going to talk about was what I've just read recently about the shadow work journal. So you mentioned, you know, getting an army of people to market your product for you, essentially. And I think that's what the shadow work journal is like, just this massively viral. I think it shows you where we're at in culture right now, where this thing that's all about like how to do Jungian self-analysis is like blowing up as like a workbook on TikTok. And they're doing the similar strategy to what Tab's Chocolate is doing, which is like, instead of like just being a traditional affiliate, they're basically urging their affiliates to start up affiliated channels. So there's an affiliate like Shadow Work Journal, this person, Shadow Work Journal, this person, Tab's Chocolate, basically people having their own secondary accounts, taking advantage of the organic algorithm out there to just like create content, become an affiliate, like a Mary Kay or like a, you know, that kind of affiliate. And I think it's a really interesting, it's an interesting trend that I'm going to be watching to see if more brands take advantage of it.
Same. Yeah. I'm always really interested to know like what, this is like very nitty gritty, but like, what are the creator fees that we're looking at for that kind of thing? And also it's like, could we just DIY it? Like if we had a product like our own notebook, could we just like, does it matter that none of us have a presence? Because you are starting from scratch when they make those accounts. Like it's not from a prominent source. It's like just a net new account. So it's like, could we at PileHouse just pile in, create a bunch of accounts, post ourselves with a product? And like, does that work at a like company level? Can you like skirt around the creator fees? What kind of fees are associated with that type of thing? And yeah, it's like, it creates like such a buy-in because it's like, if this creator likes it enough that they're willing to put their name next to it, like that's a whole other level of like, it will always, until they delete the account, but like it's there. It feels more permanent than just a quick paid ad that's gone in a couple of days.
Especially if you get the creator doing shadow work on TikTok, because that could be riveting, which I think harnesses it for sure. Tabs has that as well, because Tabs is like aphrodisiac chocolate. It has that sort of risque aspect to it as well. Interesting. I think they're doing that through Social Snowball as well, for a free shout out to the Social Snowball people. What about you, Jocelyn? Any favorite marketing stories come to mind?
Not really a story, but I do have a favorite brand right now, and they have a strong organic strategy. It's called Surreal Cereal, and they're a UK D2C brand, but they really use humor in all of their organic posts, which helps them to really hone in on that engagement across all platforms, and they just post really funny content, cereal and non-cereal related, that connects with their audience and helps them to grow that reach and just awareness on social.
That's really cool.
I have been following them for a couple of years, and originally like they had no following, but now they have over 47,000 followers on Instagram. So and I think that's all been organic. They don't have a huge ad library. So I think it just goes to show that connecting with your audience, being conversational, and having kind of a funny approach to your branding can go a long way across different platforms.
And being so fun to say, Surreal Cereal. Yeah. It's a real mouthful. But I like it. And I think, that's a really great point to highlight. I'm going to have to get these guys on the podcast.
Yeah, looking forward to the day when we can try it. I think they only ship in the UK right now, but someday we'll try their cereal.
Nice. Well, thank you both for your contributions today. I think we're doing a rerun next week, so this will be the last podcast of the last podcast of 2023. How do you feel about that?
Well, year of the sleigh for sure. Next year, 2024, we're bringing back swag.
Yeah, swag.
So swag's the new sleigh. Yeah. It's like Slay's starting to feel a bit dry. It's starting to feel a bit dated. I'm moving on. So I'm going back to like an era that I wasn't really saying swag. Well, revisiting it.
If you're Love if it. You have swag, then Slay is almost implied. Like, you're not going to have swag unless you are slaying. So it's sort of just like the evolution of just like owning. When you own Slay, it becomes swag, I think.
Swag. Totally. I don't really know. Like, I feel like we probably have different definitions of swag. I just think of Justin Bieber. I think it's like the same in my mind, but yeah. You're the Slay 2023.
What about Riz with the word of the year? Riz. I think we need to do a series this in 2024 called Riz Up Your Ads. And you can, you know, you guys can be contributors to how to Riz up things.
Yeah. I do remember being like, just because I do a lot of like TikTok work, an early adopter of Riz, and I felt ancient saying it. And then also like nobody knew what 40. I was saying. And I also didn't know what it meant. I was like, you know, it just means like you have Riz or you don't have Riz. Charisma. Yeah. Did you know that?
Charisma. Yes, of course I did. I have a 9-year-old. Did you know, we're a little bit over 30 minutes here, but did you know that all 12 days of Christmas, they're all birds? All of them. The 5 golden rings, the pipers piping, the maids a-milking. It's all birds all the way down. It's like, I haven't done the math, but it's hundreds and hundreds of birds, which is actually a little...
Well, rings birds. Is that a
type of
bird? It's
something the British people call birds. Rings. The golden rings is a certain kind of bird. You Google it, you find out. Because otherwise, what are you thinking is being gifted here? Are you thinking they're gifting other human maids and lords? Like, why are you... You're not giving those things as gifts. So it's got to be something kept, like a bird. So otherwise, 12 Days of Christmas is a whole other song. So I think it's good that it's actually about birds. And this... fact is not as mind-blowing to as many people as I think it should be. So I'm glad I'm getting it out on the podcast.
It is shocking to me. And I'm glad that we're not doing that anymore. I'd be so mad. Christmas morning, hundreds of birds in your home. You're not happy about that.
Gifting birds is barbaric as well. So yeah, let's get our thoughts down on that. No D2C birds. We draw the line at D2C. No birds. D2C will not promote it. Merry Christmas, no both ads. Of you. Happy holidays. Talk to you next year.
Thanks so much for listening to today's episode. If you're not a subscriber to our newsletter, you can do that right now at directtoconsumer.co. I'm Eric Dick, and this has been the D2C Podcast. We'll see you next time.